And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
This is Why Always Us. It's your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee is with me. Hiya, Sam.
Morning.
How are you doing?
Fine. Short podcast this week. Didn't see the game, so see you next week.
I was going to say, you admitted on the last one that you were away, so did you catch the game at all?
I thought it was always a 50-50 thing. I was never going to try and steer a group of people towards a pub to watch football, especially when they weren't my group. I knew there was a City fan going, so I was like, oh, there's an outside chance. But I mean, the weather, so we went to Lisbon, the weather was, it was like 27 degrees, but not like proper cooking yet. So we were at the beach all day and it was absolutely fantastic. But as soon as it got to half five, and obviously it got to five-ish, I was like, we're never seeing this game.
Yeah.
So as soon as it got to half five, went and got my phone, put it in my shorts and turned the alerts on, and I'd look at Twitter every now and again. So I was keeping up with it in that sense. And
fair play. Yeah, keeping
good result, it seems.
Yeah, keeping up with work while you're on holiday is not a mean thing. So that's a fair play to you. You can read everything on The Athletic, on City and more right now, just for £1 a month for 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/mancitypod and sign up. You'll get these podcasts without the ads as well. So just go to theathletic.com/mancitypod. Let's start with that Leeds game, Sam. Obviously finished 4-0. Can we count that as a big win in the context of the day? Because it's like a rotated team, De Bruyne, Mahrez, Bernardo all rested. The atmosphere was a bit raucous at times. You know, City were taking a bit of a kick in through the game. Liverpool had already won. I know it feels like a comfortable win at the end, but it is a big win, isn't it?
Of course. I mean, they are all big wins now. Like, there's only four games left. It's absolutely mad. They are all big, yeah. But yeah, for all those reasons you said, and especially because of the rotating, I think, you know, when we were talking about, you know, in the international break and before the international break, even as soon as we knew it was going to be Liverpool and Atletico Madrid in that run, and we were talking about rotating the team, and if you go back to 2019 and last season or whatever, you know, whenever he'd rotated the team, and was it between the Dortmund games he rotated the team against Leeds, and
yeah
City were not comfortable, but they were the better team, but they lost and things like that. And then like, I saw the team at the weekend, I was like, oh no, it could be one of those horrible ones. But yeah, I mean, De Bruyne didn't have to get off the bench, did he? Absolutely.
No,
perfect.
No, I mean, that is absolutely perfect, especially with the kicking City were taking in that game. I mean, I can't stress enough just how much of a kicking City were taking in this
game.
Was it
that bad? Because I've seen the match today highlights, but obviously because of the agenda, they didn't want to show any negative treatment.
Yeah, it was like Grealish, I am surprised, could walk at the end of the game.
I heard a lot about Grealish.
Yeah.
And, like, the paper getting thrown and stuff.
Yeah, he had an afternoon. There was so many of those kind of, you know, rough and tumble, they don't like it up them sort of challenges. And I thought, like, certainly in the first half.
It's not very Jesse Marsh, is it?
No, I know. First half, I felt like City were a bit rattled and Leeds were kind of able to drag them down into the chaos of the game.
I saw a tweet about that and I was like, that was exactly what I was talking about after the Real Madrid game, wasn't
it?
Remember when I was talking about how it goes up and down? I was, oh shit, it's actually happening again, even though Bielsa's not there.
Yeah, but then the second half was very good, very controlled. It was almost as if City went, no, we're sick of you dragging us down to this. You have to come up to our level. And then Leeds couldn't cope with it. So I thought in the end, it became a very kind of professional performance in how to deal with one of those games. But I was really, really worried at halftime, even with a 1-0 lead. I was really worried that if Leeds carried on making the game ugly and making it a bit of a battle like that, City might struggle. And credit to them, they didn't. And that's really given me a lot of confidence now for the final four.
Well, the thing is, and this is something that John Smith gets really annoyed about all the time, because, like, obviously we'll be at the City games. And the recent example was the Burnley one after the international break, and City, like, played them off the pitch. But obviously on Match of the Day, they need to give it they need to show like opportunities for both teams, and then obviously you cut it down. And by the end of it, it looked like, you know, Burnley had three or four forays into City's box against City's like five or six, whereas obviously the game was completely one-sided. But on Match of the Day, so when I was watching it back, and obviously you see the notifications coming through, oh, 3-0, 4-0, you think, okay, they've settled down now. But our lead seems to be creating chances right the way up until the end. Like, was it, did it still feel not open, because obviously like it was 3-0 at the end, but did it still feel like there was goals in it? Because I don't want to read too much into it, because I think at the end, at this point of the season, like at this point of the season, as long as you win, it's fine. But I am kind of thinking, don't fucking do that on Wednesday night. Basically.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think again the Match of the Day edits had a little bit of an effect there. Because like I talked about this before. Like one of my old jobs was I used to camera log for Arsenal youth highlights when I was very first getting into kind of football media. And one of the things you do is you sit there, you watch the game, the cameraman films it, and you write down a number. You write down the chances that happen and a number next to it to rate it out of 10. So that the editor can come along and go, right, I'll have this one, this one, this one, this one, because you've scored them out of 10. So what happens is you sometimes get a little bit of a distorted view of the game based on, oh, that's a good chance, that's a good chance. Whereas you have those City ones sometimes where they actually turn out to be good chances, but nobody gets a shot away, or it's just like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they don't make they just don't make the cut. So you end up with this view where I think there was a couple of moments. There was a moment where I think it was Cancelo cleared off the line, and where Edison made a good save with his feet, and like there was a bit of a rocky spell there. But what I read from that was they are fighting tooth and nail to keep this clean sheet, because they've got
it
was three goals, I think, at that time. They're thinking, if we've got plus three on Liverpool here, they only got plus one at Newcastle this morning, so like every goal matters right now. So they were. That's what I was more impressed with than anything else. I don't think it was it didn't give me worries for Wednesday night based on the chances that Leeds were creating. My worries for Wednesday night, which we'll get into a bit later on, based on final thought for that Leeds game, Sam, was that it turns out if you give half a stadium a piece of A4 card each, they'll screw it up and throw it at Jack Grealish for 90 minutes.
Yeah, again, a bit weird, because I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of diehard England fans in that crowd who probably wanted Grealish. You know, they were part of the clamour for Grealish to play during the Euros. But, you know, because he's got a big move now, everyone hates him, and that's how it works. So.
Funny, isn't it? Good. Yeah. Let's talk set pieces, because Guardiola did a bit of a brain dump in the press conference after the game. I've cut most of it out. In fact, I've only got a very little snippet of his answer. Would you believe when he was talking about this, he was actually asked about the atmosphere at Elland Road, and he gave the opportunity to just run through about 10 different things that was on his mind. This was one of the things he said, though, and I thought it was quite an interesting little snippet in it all.
So we are not a team to score lots of goals in set pieces. In the previous season, this season a little bit more, but two goals with a set piece sometimes unblock this type of games.
And he's kind of right, because the stats The Athletic have been writing about this week, Michael Cox, I think it was, most goals scored from set pieces this season is City with 18, fewest goals conceded from set pieces this season is City again with 1. And that difference of plus 17 between the for and against set pieces is the best ever in the Premier League. It is quite some way, though, behind the team. It's the defence that's got them there, because it's quite some way behind some of the other teams that have got similar numbers, the teams with plus 16, plus 15, that sort of thing. They've scored kind of late 20s in the set pieces. I think Liverpool were 28 for 13, 14, but they kept conceding them as well. So it's really shown how City have tightened up on set pieces at both ends of the pitch. In terms of where City are at with Guardiola with set pieces, this is now their best ever season. They've gone one ahead of the 2019-20 season in terms of scored, and it's comfortably their best conceded. They conceded 4 in 17-18, the Centurions season, and obviously this season just the 1. It's weird, isn't it, Sam? I mean, the talk at a couple of years ago was Richard Keys, wasn't it? You need to get Sam Allardyce in to talk about defending. Maybe they have on the sly.
They did, yeah. I've not written about that yet. I should have thought I would have mentioned it. Well, I mean, what they've done is not only have they got Rodri near post, but they've also got Ruben Dias somewhere else. So funny what a difference that makes. Actually, I Twitter searched for Rodri near post, which is a tweet that I did a couple of years ago, which was basically all of City's set piece plans. Basically, put him on the near post, whether you're attacking or defending, and that will be it. But that one didn't come up. But a tweet from the Leeds game, which I think was Dias's first game, maybe.
Yeah, it was.
And I remember, so obviously this is last season, October, and it just said, "Look, it looks like Dias and Laporte are getting on a few already, which you know could help, because you know up until now it's basically just been Rodri near post, and yeah, that's been a big help." Guardiola was asked about this a few months ago. He talked about Carlos Vicens, who was the under-18s coach last season. He got promoted up to the staff to kind of work more so with the young players. So in that sense, I think I've talked about this before, but City have obviously got so many young players, academy players in training. Normally, if they were, you know, the 18, 19-year-olds, normally, you know, they'd go have a game at the weekend under 23s, and then they'd go back on a Monday, they'd look over their game, you know, strengths and weaknesses, the analysis, that kind of thing, and then build on that. But obviously, when they're playing with the first team, it's just, okay, well, they're talking about other players who played.
Yeah.
So in the past, they haven't been able to get that specialisation in what they need, but Carlos Vicens is able to look at their performances with them, so they're still getting everything they need for their own specific game, but obviously they're doing it in the first team environment, which sounds like a very good idea. And the other thing he's doing is a set of pieces. So yeah, Guardiola talked about that before, and I know he gave Carlos credit as well at the weekend for that. But a big thing is, because when Guardiola talked about it first in like January, February, and I did the article where basically just saying Nadum every corner kick that City had taken this season, and within about 2 minutes he was like, yeah, it's this and this. I was like, right, okay, that would have taken me hours to do, and it probably would have been wrong, and he's just nailed it after like 2 minutes. But Guardiola did say then, he was like, I still think the delivery could be better. He was like, I'm sure he said Ilkay, Phil and Kevin, maybe somebody else. But at that point, it was all right. And I think we did the article before the Fulham game in the FA Cup. And, you know, I think Stone scored at the near post that day. So it was all flying. But I did kind of notice over the last few weeks, the set piece goals had dried up a bit. And we talked after the Liverpool game, didn't we, how the set piece delivery was terrible. And I think Guardiola was asked about Phil taking them. And he said, well, when Kevin, God, look at me, I'm just talking about all the first names. It's a bit annoying that. But I'm kind of paraphrasing Guardiola now. But he's like, when Kevin plays and he takes it, but yeah, it's good for Phil, blah, blah, blah. But I was thinking, like, is it not time to let Foden have a few more? I know just because he's got a couple good in the last one doesn't mean he should take them all the time. And also, in fairness, in terms of the second goal, it was just a fairly rudimentary big corner to the back post, wasn't it? Maybe we should give him credit for that, because obviously plenty of others have gone wrong. Like in that Liverpool game, it was terrible. So the delivery's been a big thing. And I remember, again, before that Liverpool game, Guardiola was talking about their set pieces. I think he mentioned it and somebody picked up on it and asked him again. And he was like, well, the delivery is really good. Whether it's Alexander-Arnold or Robertson, the delivery is really good. And then once it's really good, you've always got a chance. And then obviously he went on to talk about how they've got big aerial threats, especially in Van Dijk. But when he was talking about their delivery being good, it wasn't one of those where you think, oh, he's having a go at his own team here. But it kind of, I wouldn't have been surprised if it was in his mind a bit where he was thinking, if our delivery was just a bit better, you know, we'd have so many more chances. But obviously we saw that with particularly Foden's, the first cross for Rodri's header. Yeah, that was there. So yeah, the stars have kind of aligned a bit. There's some kind of organisation there with Carlos. Like I say, we've done the article already. It's not particularly cunning, or you know, there's no tricks where, you know, City take a short free kick and, you know, somebody's pretending to do their socks up, and then they just, you know, put the ball in the box
better than they have done before.
Yeah, and they've got, you know, three big blokes normally stand together at the far post and attack it at the same time. That is it's roughly that. You know, sometimes if they end up with the two centre backs, Rodri, and you know, if Ake's on, or Stones is playing right back and they've got four big blokes in the box, you know, one of them will be at the near post or something like that. And, you know, they'll go short, but they'll go short so they can basically get it to the corner of the box and then put a ball towards the back post, those kind of things. It's not rocket science, but it seems to be working, because I suppose, as Pep said about Liverpool, good delivery when you get it right, and good options in the box. Although Dias should score more, shouldn't he?
Well, I was thinking this. I feel like Diaz, Laporte and Ake to an extent, because Ake has scored a couple, hasn't he, for fairly limited game time. For as good as they are in the air, City, it feels like City are not actually that dangerous at set pieces. And it made me wonder, actually, are corners and kind of wide free kicks, those sorts of things, do we think they're more dangerous than they actually are? Like, is this actually City doing really, really well? But still, there's a lot of wastefulness there anyway. And that's just a kind of a natural byproduct of any team that is not coached by Tony Pulis or Sam Allardyce. That, like, because they're not specialising in using those opportunities to get to score every single time they get them.
Mm. Yeah, maybe that's interesting. I mean, I've not seen the article, so maybe it's in that. But like, City gets so many corners as well because they're attacking so much. You know, maybe, yeah, the percentage of goals from set pieces is probably smaller than a lot of other teams.
Yeah, and
maybe
I just wonder if every time the ball goes behind and the fans get really, really excited about the fact that there's a chance to put it in the box and, you know, City...
That's every team, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's every team, but corners are just not as dangerous as we think they are.
Oh, no, definitely not. Again, second mention for Nadim already, but I remember him talking on other podcasts, whether it's just the radio or whether it's ones we've done or conversations or whatever, but he was saying, like, behind closed doors, you know, you get a corner and you kind of treat it for what it is, like not an especially big chance, you know, you're fairly happy defending corners, but obviously once the fans are back in and everyone's going crazy, you think, well, hold on, what, like, what's everyone going crazy for? Because fans instinctively think, oh, we've got a corner here, we've got a big chance. But that's kind of more the psychological difference of having fans in the stadium. But it does go to show that, yeah, once you get a corner, like the difference between that and a goal kick is, it's absolutely a massive, massive kind of momentum change, isn't it, in terms of how the fans feel. If it goes beyond for a goal kick, just think, oh, fuck's sake. Like, especially if it's a team that's going to waste a bit of time. Whereas if you've got a corner, then yeah, it's like a big
chance to pile on it. And it actually, maybe it's just not, it's, I don't know.
Just speaking of Diaz by the end, I saw that clip on Twitter where City players had a bit of a huddle in front of the fans or whatever they were celebrating. And the commentator was talking over it, but you could hear Diaz saying like something like, we'll fight to the end. Like he said it twice, something like that. And it is a proper like stereotypical Diaz like LinkedIn thing to say. But like, as much as I take the piss, like it's obviously like, genuinely very effective. Like, and that is, you know, that was part of the reason that City were able to turn things around last year, that kind of infectiousness of that spirit that he's got. And like, yeah, as much as I do take the piss and probably will continue to do so because it is amusing, like I do appreciate that it is very effective and it does work. And also you can't just be me like Monday to Friday and be cynical and take the piss and then turn up on a Saturday and then start shouting at people to fight till the end. You've got to live it every day.
Yeah.
So the fact that he is like that and the fact his Instagram is like it is, it's part of the full package, really. And it's like when people laugh at people on LinkedIn for like getting up at 5 a.m. and doing like 100 crunches and making like a green tea smoothie and whatever. And then, well, you know, these ridiculous things that people do, these
that
routines.
Squeeze every single minute out of every single
and we're
day.
All just like Jesus fuck. But I mean, at the end of the day, if they're bowling about LA in a condo with a six pack and they've got like a millionaire tech company, then like we should probably listen to them a bit more, to be fair. So it's a bit like that with Diaz. Like I'll sit here and say, how, oh, what a dick with my little belly and, you know, eating chocolate in the evening. Never have been or will be a professional footballer. But yeah, it clearly works for him and it clearly works for City, and that little we'll fight to the end thing is, good little proof of that.
If City players were social media sites, who would they be if Diaz is LinkedIn?
What's Grealish? Because I feel like there's so many. I was going to say Instagram, but it's a bit granddad now, isn't it?
I don't know, is it? I use Instagram more.
Well, exactly, yeah.
He might be TikTok,
I hate
actually,
to break it to you, mate, but we are old. What? Yeah, he might be TikTok, but I don't know if he is. I feel more like Cole Palmer's TikTok, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Who's going to be Snapchat though? Because that's basically any. So when I haven't said this before, but in the international break, I went to Haaland's hometown. So there's a little article coming up for you soon, if and when that happens. And I was speaking to one of his former teammates. I was like, "How do you keep in touch now?" I got a WhatsApp group, and he was like, "Yeah, it's just Snapchat." To be honest, I was like, "Oh yeah, of course you're 21. Like,
yeah.
Of course it would be Snapchat."
Foden?
Who? Yeah, Foden. Yeah, it has to be Foden, doesn't it? That has to be Foden, really. I mean, it could be any of them. Like, It could even be Rodri, just because he's young. Do you know what I mean? Even though Rodri's like, oh, he went to university and he's a very intelligent guy, just because he's like 23
yeah,
or whatever, he probably does use it. But yeah, okay, Foden.
I'd have had Foden.
No, Palmer's TikTok.
Palmer's TikTok. I'd have had Rodri, sorry, as WhatsApp something. Like, it feels like a little bit plain but functional. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really harsh. Rodri's had a fantastic season, but that's really harsh.
Like one of the biggest apps in the world, so that's absolutely fine. I mean, who would be Facebook? Fabian Delph.
Yeah, someone who's long gone. That's
who's Twitter?
I don't know. Maybe it's Pep. Maybe Twitter's Pep.
Yeah,
the older one of the group.
Yeah, and he mentions stuff that he shouldn't. You know, like he obviously reads stuff that is no good for his mental health, kind of thing. But kind of internalizes it and just brings it out at press conferences to have a little joke. So
yeah
okay. Just at the risk of running this feature into the ground, let's agree it's Pep and move on.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I do want to talk about Foden's delivery, though, for the opening goal, Sam, because I can't explain what I like about it. In like the way he wraps his foot around it, it feels like nothing new. It feels like we've seen players do this before. But he kept the delivery really kind of flat. And what I mean by that is it kind of had pace and swing on it, but it was always in that kind of route that would never tempt the goalkeeper off his line to come and deal with it. But was kind of close enough to the goalkeeper and the 6-yard box to mean that the defenders weren't going to come and deal with either. There was like, the error from Leeds is letting Rodri make the run. It's not cutting the ball. It's not cutting the ball out or not being able to get anything on the cross. It's a fantastic delivery.
Yeah, I just watched it again. You're right, actually. It is. Yeah, it never goes that high. It's proper arrowed into the box, isn't it? He has a proper run there again. I could, like, for the benefit of this podcast, I could say, hold on, give me 5 minutes and I'll look at it and I might still be wrong. Like, it's one of those, if I said to Nadine, we'd be like, oh yeah, so-and-so has not done his job there. But it's a hell of a run. You are right about the delivery is great. And
the best word I can come up with for that delivery is flat, because it doesn't deviate from the course it needs to take. And that's such a wanky way of saying it, but it's true.
Yeah, no, it was a bit like an Edison pass.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know how he does it. It's like a knuckleball free kick, isn't it? Where he just goes, right, okay, this is going to go just above your head, but no higher, like to the guy who's trying to cut it out. Yeah, a bit like one of those, but in cross form. Now, funnily enough, with the Foden thing, you know, I was going to say there, he's on the kind of on the right path to being, you know, if let's just say if he can more consistently put those into the box, then that's another weapon in the armory. But obviously he is young, so developing in that sense. But obviously there's been a lot of talk about him going back into midfield, hasn't there? Again, whenever Guardiola's asked about it, and he was at the weekend, he always says, you know, he needs to have different gears to his game, doesn't he? Like, needs to be able to change the tempo, but at the moment he's just always high tempo, like where he wants him to be more like David Silva. And he said David Silva sometimes slowed the game down to speed it up, which is, you know, pals and all of that kind of stuff that we've talked about before. But it's interesting that he wants him to do that, whereas you just think, can he not just be Kevin De Bruyne?
Yeah,
can he not just be the De Bruyne one and just be and just do that? But I guess he obviously sees the potential. Maybe if Pep had had De Bruyne when he was 20, well, in fact 17,
we'd have had a different De Bruyne.
It'd have maybe tried to make him do that.
Yeah,
that's an interesting question. It's a shame I wasn't at the game, because I would have asked Pep, I think, at the weekend, like, why do you want him to be Silva? But maybe it's just because it's not so much Silva. It's just because if you can if you can add in something to somebody's game, then why wouldn't you? Yeah. And like you say, maybe the time he got to work with De Bruyne, he's obviously added a lot, but not necessarily that. Although something's ringing a bell now from Paul and Lou's book about Arteta talking about De Bruyne and saying he's added different gears to his game. I might have to have a little revisit of that. If you see an article about that in a couple of weeks, then you know where the inspiration's come from.
Yeah, good. It's interesting, though, because Foden, obviously, we're talking about set pieces and the delivery that Foden put in. He obviously put in the corner that Diaz won the header for, that Ake scored. But also the assist for Jesus's goal. That pass doesn't really feel on at the point he plays it. Do you know what I mean? That's like a De Bruyne pass as well.
Was anybody worried about that? Because whenever I saw it, I was like, oh. I'm surprised. I know there was obviously a VAR check.
But yeah, I thought it was a mile off.
Yeah. When I saw it, I was like, okay, that's probably offside then. But I don't remember looking at my phone when it was 3-0 and seeing loads of City fans saying, oh, this is probably offside or whatever. But yeah, exactly. It just seemed all very strange. So when I saw the goal first, just, you know, the classic switch of play out to Cancelo, and suddenly he's got loads of space and Foden's got loads of space and then it's a goal. Like, that's why teams just have to sit back, basically, isn't it? Because if you just let City do that, then you're in big trouble. But yeah, like, that's the thing. Foden's kind of range of passing from those positions. And even, you know, he played in a kind of more of a number six role for England under 21s. So I remember looking at clips of that, and he really sprays the passes around, like Pirlo style, when he's in that role, just like out to the wings and stuff. And I think I didn't see this particular England game, and I can't remember who it was against. It might have been like Andorra or something, but it was October while I was on holiday again, and everyone was talking about Foden in midfield being great because of his range of passing. But obviously, this is what we talk about with the false nine. And when people say, oh, he's had a quiet season or whatever, it's like, well, he's just in a kind of quiet role. And when he's on the wings, he can dribble a bit more and get shots in and stand out a bit more that way, because it's a different skill set. And obviously, when he's in midfield, then he does something else altogether, because obviously when you're a winger, there's not so many chances for through balls. But when you're in those kind of number eight positions, there's lots more. So yeah, it is a great way for him to show off those different sides of his game. And you know, the other thing Guardiola said was he's sure that, you know, eventually he will play in midfield. And you just think, God, imagine when it gets to that stage where Guardiola thinks, yeah, you've learned now. Like, that could be something really special.
Yeah, yeah.
And Iniesta kind of thing, really. I think that's what he wants to do with Grealish as well. But
yeah.
We shall see.
We'll see that. I've not really talked about Grealish, given the treatment he'd had at weekend, Sam. But it feels a little bit unfair, because I thought he dealt with it quite well.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I say, I didn't see the whole game enough, but I saw a lot of the tweets about it, and I think there was an article in the Telegraph as well about it, actually. But in terms of, by dealing with it quite well, what do you mean? Like, because people kind of thought, oh, we shouldn't play the second leg against Atletico Madrid in case he gets wound up. But when he was getting, when he came on against Atletico, he did deal with it well.
He was basically getting kicked all over the place. He was having the card thrown at him, which I genuinely think there's been a little bit of an overreaction to, because it's like, it's pieces of fucking card. It's not hurting him. And he was laughing about it, which means that he wasn't getting wound up by it. And then he wasn't like the other thing. I saw a lot of like Gary Neville talk about, well, what next? As if there was going to be machine guns on the seats or something like that next time around. But like, the other thing is as well, the number of times where he didn't get a free kick, that was where he absolutely should have had a free kick. There were times where he was just kicked in the air, lost possession, and then the referee, for fairly unknown reasons, just waved play on. And that's how he ended up getting his booking, I think, a bit of frustration. But then the second half comes along, and I saw people tweeting that he should be coming off, that he's a little bit of a risk because he could quite easily get wound up, especially on a yellow card. And the way City just moved through the gears in that second half and the way they took control of the game, I felt like he was enjoying being the pantomime villain at that stage. I felt like he was enjoying being the one for them, everybody to shout at and target and to, you know, the histrionics of throwing your arms up in the air when you don't get the decision your way sort of thing. I think he was enjoying that focus because it was almost detracting from everything else Leeds were doing and letting City get on with the job.
Yeah, quite possibly. The other, I mean, obviously, you've been able to sum that much better than I could, because I didn't see the game. But on that similar theme, in terms of definitely should have had free kicks, and I messaged you this last night when I put Match of the Day on, because I'd seen Fernandinho's goal on Saturday, but I hadn't really watched it properly. And then when I watched it back yesterday, I was like, I was Sterling not got the penalty there.
Yeah, no.
Just ran into the box and just got pushed over. I just got pushed over in the box now. Like, it probably would have been one of those brief VAR checks when it doesn't, you know, the game's not even stopped, you just carry on. If Fernandinho hadn't scored, and they would have said no penalty for whatever reason. But like,
well, they'd have said no penalty because the protocol is the referee describes what he's seen to the VAR, and if it's not different, then they don't overrule it. And he'll have gone, I've seen a coming together with Sterling and whoever, and that won't be enough to change the mind of whoever's in the VAR booth.
Yeah,
it was an absolute stonewaller. But then again, I've got this theory that Raheem Sterling needs to work harder to be fouled than anybody else.
Well, yeah, that's what made me think. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, that's that thing of Sterling does not get in decisions. And when you mentioned about the same thing happening with Grealish, then
I don't think it was a specific anti-Sterling thing this time around or whatever to do with that. I think it was just the referee was terribly inconsistent. It wasn't.
Well, so. That adds to the big win element as well, doesn't it? Like if you go to Leeds and the atmosphere is as good as it was, and the ref kind of,
it's a random decision generator, lets the game go and not
picking up on fouls and stuff, then that's a recipe for disaster, that really. But then City won 4-0, so fair play.
Yeah. So, recipes for disaster. Real Madrid on Tuesday, Sam. How are you feeling now that the dust has settled on the last leg? I'm in the position of maintaining things are still okay because it's now a one-off game and City have a goal lead. So, they've got the bonus of no away goals. They go to this game with a one-goal lead. Just play the way you play. And, you know, I think, you know, probably going to be all right.
Yeah, good chance of being all right. It's just Real Madrid, though, isn't it? And it's what they do. So I still think the game's going to be the same as the first leg in the sense that it's going to be open. There's going to be goals. Both teams will score. But, you know, if City are as wasteful as they were or more wasteful and Madrid get a couple more chances, then, you know, it could go south. But obviously, yeah, City, they had the good win at the weekend. They managed to rest some players, which was very useful, and get the win as well. So yeah, absolutely, that's absolutely huge. And then, yeah, I am a bit concerned for them just because it's Real Madrid and it's the Bernabeu, and this is how these things seem to work. And if City come through it, you'd be like, oh yeah, you know, look, they'll get loads of praise anyway, because if you get to the Champions League final, you beat Real Madrid, you get loads of praise. But it will be a fucking hell of an achievement, I think, because just because of how Real Madrid have got through to this stage, you know, even though they were pretty poor against PSG, came through with an amazing turnaround. Yeah. Obviously, getting battered by Chelsea, still came through it. Like, there will be a time when, you know, City were really going to have to dig deep, and if they do it, whether it's in 90 minutes or extra time or whatever, it really will be a hell of an achievement. So,
yeah.
But it's that thing again, isn't it, of like, we kind of look at everyone else like, oh, Liverpool are so good at this and they can do this, and oh, it's Real Madrid, and it's like, it's City though as well. Like, City are unbelievable. So yeah, I'll try and put a bit of faith into this incredible team, and they're obviously in a good position from the first leg, but it's still very precarious.
Yeah, I think that's what's changed with me. You know, I think I finally allowed myself to. One of the reasons why I've been enjoying this running more than feeling particularly tense about it, which I would have done, you know, if this was me in 2018-19, I was a, you know, physical wreck for most of that running. I think one of the reasons why I'm enjoying it more is I've allowed myself to put a little bit more faith in this team. They might not win, and I've accepted that they might not win. And in order to win, you have to go through these moments of you know, tense times in the big games, but they're good enough to get through it. And if they don't get through it, then they'll get another chance to do it next season. But they are good enough to get through it, so they might do it. And I think that's why it's been such a kind of a revelation for me for this running, you know.
Yeah, well, that's pretty similar to how Guardiola looks at these days, isn't it? Like, no real nerves, no real stress. It's just the lads are ready to do it. So what's the point of worrying about it? And if you know, and if they don't do it, he's pretty sure that they will have given it everything. And if they don't, then it's not because of a lack of effort or whatever. And that's just football. So that's the kind of thing that the Guardiola's come to terms with. And obviously you're very similar in that sense as well. So it's a good way to be, but obviously even with him and being like that, you know, he's still obviously going to be incredibly nervous during the game. Like, just like the way he that reaction to the Mahrez miss was like, he just never does that, does he? So like, it's obviously when you're in it, and it's just, obviously it's the same with you, it's the same with me to it from a different angle, and all the fans, like, you can be as relaxed as you want going into it, but obviously during those 90 minutes or, you know, 15 minutes before kickoff, an hour before kickoff, whatever it may be, maybe even 6 hours, you know, the nerves are always going to be there. But
yeah, I've just decided I'm not going to let the nerves ruin the week. I mean, it might be tense during the game, but I'm not going to let it ruin the days in the build up to the game. There's no point anymore. I'm interested in your thoughts on how the team's going to look. I mean, we know, obviously, you mentioned it there, De Bruyne, Mahrez, Bernardo all rested at weekend, so it will be very little surprise to see them back in the team. However, the defence is still a bit held together by sticky tape. Ake limped out against Leeds there. Stones wasn't even in the team. He obviously limped out against Real Madrid. Walker's had absolutely no time on the pitch. He might not be fit for midweek. Diaz is only just back from injury. How do you see it all looking?
Probably the back four that finished the game. Cancelo at right back, Zinchenko at left back, and Laporte and Diaz at centre back, I guess. And then obviously the fact that City play Newcastle on a Sunday afternoon, a bit more recovery time, it's actually pretty favourable. That it's probably about as good as it gets. It's pretty helpful, so they could maybe then go again if they had to, but obviously you'd be hoping that Walker and Stones could start to put in an appearance by that point. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the back four that finished the game. Cancelo at right back is weird, isn't it? Like, he's capable of so many good things. I say capable of. He does so many good things. Like, the vast majority of the stuff he does is good, but does some weird stuff. And just kind of introduced falling over while in possession now. I mean, he did against Atletico Madrid, just got the ball and just fell over. And obviously, because this wasn't on Match of the Day either, but I saw a tweet saying, like, during the game, Cancelo survived like a Gerrard moment. I was like, what was this? And then my wife messaged me about, I think it was half time, and she sent me a video of it. I was like, fucking hell, can you imagine? Like, can you imagine if that had happened?
Yeah. So just a message to City players, don't fall over on the halfway line when there's nobody else behind you in a tight title race. It never ends well.
So, I guess it'll be that back four. But at the end of the day, God, that Real Madrid game feels like about a month ago. But at the end of the day, with Cancelo back and not suspended, they're in a better position than they were last week, really. So that's not too bad.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's finish, Sam, as well, with a little bit of a touch on Guardiola and his future, because there are reports at the moment that he's close to signing an extension. We're not really that much to add, but I think my question about it all is, you talked earlier that he seems a lot more relaxed and how he's doing things at the moment. Why wouldn't he sign an extension? He's never going to get it better than at City.
Yeah, exactly, and he knows that. So the article last week that I did before the Real Madrid game was based on the Bayern Munich against Real Madrid games when he was at Bayern. But it was also based on, there was a bit about, you know, the reaction of the Spanish press around the Atletico Madrid game at the start of April. And just when he was at Bayern, everyone above him was just constantly talking. So like Beckenbauer, who was just an honorary club president, to be fair, so he wasn't like officially there, but he was always just saying like, oh, don't like this possession of football, basically, like every time. He even said like, oh, we'll end up like Barca and nobody will want to see us. I was like, oh yeah, that famous Barca team that was shit.
as the old saying goes.
Yeah, that was really strange. I mean, to be fair, that season, was the Tata Martino season, I think, and yeah, they struggled a bit. But even so, it was like, this is like very recently one of the best teams ever. So wind it in. But like, even Matthias Sammer, so with the sporting director who sat on the bench, it's like Cheeky Bagheeristein sitting next to you on the bench and then giving an interview saying, oh, we've dropped off a bit. You know, we were on fire, but since we won the Bundesliga, we've dropped off a bit and we know we need to up our game because like, they beat Kaiserslautern 5-1. Kaiserslautern win the second division. They beat them 5-1 to get to the German Cup final. And he was like, yeah, but Kaiserslautern's not our level kind of thing. You know, we need to play better against Dortmund and Madrid. You imagine Guardiola in his first season, like in a new culture, trying to adapt his game and get used to like the players and the style and learn the language and everything. You've just got like the sporting director talking like that.
It'd be like if Stan Collymore was City's sporting director in that first season.
But this is it. It's like, so Beckenbauer...
What's his tackles?
He kind of made some good point. Yeah, Jesus Christ. I'm not going into that. But the thing is, it's like, a lot of what Beckenbauer was saying was kind of, was like fair points, really. And a lot of what, like Sammer, when he was saying, oh, we've dropped off a bit, like, again, fair enough. And it's not to say that former players or like even like employees at your own club shouldn't like have constructive criticism. That's kind of fair enough. But it's just from Guardiola's point of view now, like I put in the article, can you imagine Mike Summerby saying, oh, we were shit this game? Like, when, you know, we should have, if we'd have had a striker, we'd have won 4-0 or something. And then all of a sudden, you know, the press conference, obviously, oh, Mike Summerby's said this, what do you reckon? And then Guardiola's got to talk about that. And it's said, you just don't need it. You just don't need it. And like Rummenigge, kind of going into all this long-winded, but read the article if you can. Rummenigge was like, oh yeah, when Real Madrid come back here for the second leg, you know, the atmosphere will be hot enough to like melt the trees or whatever. You know, they don't know what's in store for them. When they lost 4-1 to Dortmund last year, you know, that'll seem pleasant in comparison and all this. And again, it's like, the only time you ever hear from Cheeky Bagheeristein is him saying, oh yeah, you know, they're a very difficult opponent and, you know, we'll have to be play at our best, you know, because we really respect them. Like, can you imagine even like positive stuff? Like Rummenigge going, yeah, like we'll take the game to him. Like, can you imagine Guardiola thinking, fuck's sake, like, can you just shut up, all of you? And this, so yeah, to bring it back round, like, at the end of the article, I was like, look, there's talk of him staying for longer. And that talk's based on the fact that a couple of whispers that I'd heard, obviously not strong enough to do the article. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, I knew what the Sun wrote, oh, blah, blah, blah. Because fair play, they put it out there. But, you know, there's obviously, with all the Haaland stuff that's been going on, and, you know, the hope is, we can just do the story saying, right, it's done, Bosch, rather than, you know, no more small updates now with Haaland. I'm hoping the next one is, right, City going to sign him in the next 2 days, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. And yet, as part of that, supposedly, as the Sun said, you know, Haaland's been given assurances that Guardiola's going to stay longer, and obviously Guardiola's happy to stay longer, that kind of thing. What I'd heard was another three years, but again, that was just a rumor. That was just kind of, oh yeah, so and so's been speaking to so and so, and this is what's going on. And 3 years, the Sun story said 2 years with an option for a third, didn't it? So it all seems to be the same ballpark, and maybe we're all wrong because, like I say, I can't sit here with any authority and tell you that's definitely going to happen. But yeah, that's the vibe in terms of him staying.
I wondered if. And I know this is entirely speculation based on his demeanour in the last few weeks, but I wondered if he'd kind of settled into how things are now at City in a weird sense. Like, he's not feeling the pressure that he was feeling previously. He's, you know, he's always known that the higher ups at City have trusted him and wanted him and have had that. I think it was your line before his last contract extension. Why wouldn't you keep extending it if you have the option to, and he's happy to stay? I think he's kind of settled into the life in that kind of situation and realizes the trust he's got, and the absolute kind of situation is not going to get better anywhere else. They could chuck in Haaland next season if they get that deal over the line. If they win everything they're left in this season, it just feels like he's having a lot more fun with everything as well. And that, I think that's a big thing in it all. I think that's a big thing in why he would want to stay and whatever. And it's absolutely mad to me to be sitting here to have a manager as good as Guardiola has been with the career he's had, and be talking that he could have been at City for twice as long as he's been anywhere else. And that's mad.
Yeah, exactly. That was the point with the Bayern stuff. Like, if you've got to work on TV and you see Bayern not playing well, or you got to give an interview, then I feel free to say it. Like you are kind of well within your rights. But from Guardiola's point of view and why he would want to stay at City for longer, you just don't have that. You don't have any external stress. It's all set up for it to work. I mean, the funny thing with Haaland is, I don't think Guardiola sees it like we do in the sense of, oh, well, you know, they're going to win the league for 10 years here. Guardiola appreciates it's going to be a bit of a good challenge, but a bit of a challenge to get him to adapt his game. Like, you know, I'm sure the narrative will be, well, they've got Haaland now, so he's going to stay because it's this, you know,
magic goal scoring monster.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I think he'd have been happier with Kane in the sense that, well, Kane can just do what he wants already and just plug him in and it'll work. But if they'd signed Kane last year, and Pep had signed a contract now, the narrative probably would have been, well, they've won the title, so he's just staying for longer kind of thing. And yeah, they've signed Kane and blah, blah, blah. But obviously now it's like, well, Haaland and Pep, blah, blah, blah. It's linked. But I think it would have been fairer to say that Guardiola is kind of, I don't know, excited by the future with Kane more so than with Haaland, because it just... from his point of view, he was like, well, this is going to work. Whereas with Haaland, I think Pep's like, okay, well, we're going to have to make some changes here. But you know what Pep's like? It's not a problem, is it? Like, that's not... like, it's a challenge, but it's a fun challenge. It's a challenge that he's fully capable of. And also, yeah, he realises that he's in a great place to do it. And, you know, Haaland's fucking unbelievable. So if you can get it to all click... like, again, when he leaves City, whether it's like 7 years or 10 years or whatever, and he's won however many trophies... you know, there'll be people looking back on it going, oh, well, you know, he just took over the richest club in the world and blah, 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 blah. But again, from his point of view, and maybe this is bollocks, but from his point of view, he took on the City job when he started because he felt it was more of a challenge. Because yeah, he thought if he'd gone to United or Chelsea or Liverpool or whatever, who were already kind of established at the top, loads of trophies, history in the Champions League kind of thing, you know, it would have been, you know, still a challenge, obviously, to come to England and work, but, you know, more kind of set up. Whereas at City, it was like, yeah, I don't know, that just take them from, okay, a couple of Premier League wins, but take them forward, you know, build something in Europe, build something up. And obviously, we remember when Pellegrini left, the squad was drifting a bit. The club arguably drifting a bit. I don't know, probably not. Well, you could say so, because if they hadn't hired Pep and they'd have hired somebody else and then that had gone wrong, then... they would have been drifting. So basically, Pep's kind of galvanised everything. But yeah, so he came to City kind of for that challenge. And look, if there's non-City fans listening to this, maybe even some City fans, you probably laugh and go, oh, well, yeah, well, he's been given this and he's been given this and he's been given this. But and certainly off the pitch, he's been given a lot of stuff for him to be successful, which is why we're talking about him staying for 10 years, because he knows that. That was... seen as a challenge, and Haaland will be seen as a bit of a challenge, and it'll work very nicely, you'd have thought, over the next 2 or 3 years if he does sign that contract.
Yeah, a quick thing that occurred to me as you were speaking then, as Guardiola said in the past that kind of Ferguson style dynasties don't really exist anymore and will never exist anymore. Because I'm just wondering...
Yeah, but he's not going to do 25 years.
No, he's not. He's not, but not very many managers do, what, 7 or 8 years?
No, well, Klopp's the longest serving Premier League manager now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Since Dyche went.
Guardiola's second.
He was there 6 months before Pep. So no, you're right, they don't. And obviously, look, there's talk about, you know, Klopp signed his contract, so therefore Pep's got to do his. But I think Guardiola was asked about that in the press conference on Friday. He was like, look, that, you know, fair play to Jurgen, but it's nothing to do with my future, and it isn't, is it? Like, you know, if he wasn't happy, he'd say he wouldn't stay. But he obviously is, so... chances are that he will. And it's just interesting that they're both there at the same time. But yeah, a bit. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of had the feeling that... It's not like I had the feeling that Klopp was going to leave at some point soon, but I hadn't really thought about him staying for longer. And now it's just like, right, okay, so they're just going to keep doing this for years now, are they? So yeah, fair enough that City are going to do that too with Pep.
Yeah, have fun, everyone.
Yeah, well, I mean, even Chelsea now, who last summer was supposedly going to be challenging and you know, could win the Premier League, they've got a massive job in their hands just to kind of cling on to being third next season. So, yeah, you can only really see City and Liverpool pulling away further. But at the end of the day, it is a great rivalry, isn't it? The games are great. Everyone's got the title race that they didn't think they were going to have in Christmas. So, yeah, fair play to them. Yeah. Crack on.
We'll check in next week, Sam, see where things are at.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it could be emergency podcast territory, couldn't it?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It could, like, I didn't want to say it just in case.
I don't know how it will work because what's my flight? Yeah, and I'm flying straight to Heathrow. But sometime Thursday afternoon, if kind of circumstances demand, we'll record a little podcast and go, bloody hell, that was mad. Possibly even, actually, do it from the Bernabeu if possible. If it's that mad, it's like, right, okay, let's just do a quick half an hour on that madness and hopefully look forward to City against Villarreal in the Champions League final.
Yeah, take your wired headphones this time, just in case.
Yep.
Yeah, that brings us to the end of this week's Wire Whistles. Thanks as ever to Sam Lee.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.